Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. So everyone has a startup to invest in, and a lot of people want to invest in startups. And for the longest time, there wasn't a whole lot of change, and quite honestly, diversity, and how a lot of that was done. That said, the times they are a-changin', and how they are a-changin', with a new approach to investing that is occurring all across America, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, before I introduce my co-host for the day, and also before we get too far into it, I want to let you know that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Our Crowd. Do you wish you were in early on some of the best performing IPOs of 2019 and 2020? Our Crowd investors were, and now you can join them in what's next. With Our Crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and more importantly, early. Our Crowd investors have benefited from Our Crowd companies IPOing like Beyond Meat, or being bought and acquired by other companies like Intel, Nike, Microsoft, and Oracle. Go down to the show notes, ourcrowd.com/hustle. With me today, I have someone who's been on the show quite a few times, but not for a while. One of my in-house co-workers and in the past co-founders, Daryl Blackburn, the COO of Fullscale. Daryl, welcome back.
Hi, Matt. It's good to be back.
It's been a while, man. Where you been?
I've been around. I think my last episode time around this time last year with the PPP loans.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was a popular one. We're trying to define that. It's crazy how much things changed and all of the wild stuff that happened in just 1 year. Now, part of why I wanted to have you on the show is, well, first off, you've got history in finance, but past that, you have been a critical person in the investments that we've made at Fullscale, which is about a half a dozen different companies. So we've gone through the whole gamut of assessing a lot of different companies, deciding where we made some investments, where we didn't. And, you know, I thought, and you're also one of my co-founders from Gigabook and a lot of other things that we've done in the past. So yeah, do you want to tell anyone about your backstory or any of that?
Yeah, backstory. Been working pretty much on and off together pretty much my whole professional career. We've taken some breaks and detours, and some kind of magnet always gets us back here. But yeah, as you kind of mentioned, we've been on both sides of the gamut. We know the frustrations from trying to get investment and what the roadblocks you kind of run into, as well as the assessment process when you're trying to make an investment that you hope pays off big for you in the end. So we've got a little bit of experience on both sides that I think we can offer.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I think that's where the real underlying importance of what we may have to say, you know, comes in. Cause you know, we've made investments, we've been on the other side trying to garner investments. And then over the last 3 years have spent a hell of a lot of time talking about different people's investments and the things that they do. And, you know, part of what we want to talk about today is this new approach to investing. And you're seeing a lot of this. Like, now I mentioned that you were one of my co-founders at gigabook.com. Now, when that was the case, there was just like, you just had straight up investment for the most part, VCs, and there weren't nearly as many of them. There weren't nearly as many funds, and the level of sophistication and access that startups had to different types of investment was pretty limited. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it was that, and the struggle with, I mean, we were fairly new in the SaaS space, which has been obviously taken off like a rocket ship, and just seeing the way that investing has matured away from the old kind of thought process about what assets do you physically hold and more around the potential that your business has to grow and the kind of that ceiling of where you could really top out with an investment, that maturity in the whole investment community has been fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and so have the valuations on many days. So yeah. Kind of makes you shake your head and make it spin. Now, one of the things and part of what we're going to talk about today is this new, you know, these new startup investment, or often referred to as equity crowdfunding. Now, when we had founded Gigabook, and you know, this 8 years ago at this point, it doesn't feel like that long, but that's how long ago it was. But you know, with that, I mentioned at the top of the episode, there were very few, if any, investment vehicles available, and a lot of that was just restrictions. Like the government had restrictions on it, and you know, I mentioned that this episode's brought to you by Our Crowd, and they work with accredited investors. And you know, that's that there's a different class of investor now. Accredited investors, that was a status that you could claim years ago, but overall, because of the number of small businesses, the number of startups, and all of that, the government and the Security and Exchange Commission created quite a bit of regulation around that. Like, I mean, do you have any comments about that? Like, why they do that?
Well, so the thought behind that is to protect people from what they don't know. Typically, for right or wrong reasons, lower income individuals were thought for a long time by those regulating boards to have less sophistication with investments. So the argument of that, in quotes, however you want to interpret that, was that higher net worth individuals had more sophistication and could also afford more risk, which these are typically deemed pretty risky investments.
Yeah. And overall, you know, the thing is, and not to be Debbie Downer here, but most startups fail. And and the reason for, and when we say sophisticated, I think it's that the purpose of accredited investors, it's that, but also your ability to afford losing money. And I think what they're trying to do is protect people that might not operate in a business space, or they don't want you to get devastated. Right. By making an investment. Because, you know, here's the thing is a lot, I mean, startups sound great and everyone wants to hit a home run, but if you don't understand the space, or you don't understand how it works, or the difficulty that it takes to get a startup to go from anywhere to even revenue. Like, we talked about that so much. I wrote about it in my book, Million Dollar Bedroom, which, by the way, if you read that book, Daryl is the intern. Not named by name, but you were the intern back then. So and now you're the chief operating officer of a company with 200 global employees and millions of dollars of revenue. So can't call you the intern anymore. But you know, with that, like, I've talked on this show so many times. So Gigabook is a great example. So when we launched it, it had this world of upside, and it also had a world of competition. But the problem that software, especially complex and sophisticated platforms, have was, well, it took us 2.5 years to generate any revenue, because it takes forever to build these things. And that's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand about startups is there's a shitload of competition out there. And then the numbers aren't stacked in your favor. So when we talked about accredited investors, I'll define that. And that is very easy to define. Now, I do want to say as well, like, we're not suggesting that you invest in startups. We're not saying that that's the right thing for you. We talk about our own experience and give you facts or whatever, but I'm not a licensed dealer broker of those kind of services, which is something that is important. And that's like I said, these rules and these regulations exist for a reason. Now, when it comes to an accredited investor, that is someone, I'm going to read this word for word. To be an accredited investor, a person must have an annual income exceeding $200,000 or $300,000 for joint income for the last 2 years with the expectation of earning the same or higher income in the current year. And there's also, there are some thresholds that change around what your net worth is, and the value of your home can't count towards that. But you need to check that before you get into it, because here's the thing is you're actually legally forbidden from either taking in certain types of investors or being an investor in certain things. So you have a background in finance. Like, what would violating that, what kind of heartache can that lead to?
Problems that you don't want with regulating boards that you don't want to deal with. Yeah, I mean, it can run the gamut. You can get yourself into a whole lot of mess that you are not navigated to operate within.
And when he says that, that means someone drops the hammer and ends your world. That's Thor's hammer when it comes down. So we say SEC, when you're selling stock or ownership in an entity, those are known as securities. And the way that they're traded and transferred is really important. Now, that's actually what I like about some of the changes. So in 2012, President Obama signed the Jumpstart Our Business Startups Act, the Jobs Act of 2012, and it made it a lot more accessible for people in general to invest in certain kinds of startups and businesses. So I don't even know if you know this, Daryl, but it created a smaller cap for the non-accredited. So some of that, and some of the way that some of these platforms work, is they allow a little bit of what I'll just call micro investment. It puts caps on the limits. So in some of these platforms, over a 12-month period, for example, if your annual income or your net worth is less than $107,000, that's a strange parallel, your net worth or your income,
right?
You can invest up to $2,200 or 5% of the lesser. So that enabled these things, these equity funding platforms, where a certain businesses could go out and maybe if you just wanted to invest $200 in them, you could.
Right. Makes it more, definitely changes the level of accessibility.
Yeah. So, you know, so these platforms have popped up everywhere. Now with that, this creates a different level of complexity and diligence that you need to go through. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that, but you know, one of the things that I like, especially, and you know, I'm not throwing our crowd out there again, because they're the sponsor of this episode, and they are, but what I like about our crowd is they do all the vetting. So they'll have hundreds of companies and startups apply, and they'll say no to almost all of them on the way to picking a couple that are vetted. And the thing that is cool about some of these platforms, including our crowd, is so you have big funds that are putting money into some of these other investments. So you're investing alongside these companies. And right. I think that's a different thing, you know, and like then, I mean, I think when crowdfunding first came around, you have things like Kickstarter, Indiegogo. Those are usually used by someone that has a product. Well, like look at Mixtape the Game.
Right.
That's something we own part of, and it launched on Kickstarter. But that's a way different type of investment than a startup.
Oh, for sure.
So overall, like you look at some of this, and we're going to talk a little bit now about some of the pros of startup investment and some of the cons. You want to start with pros or cons?
I always like to try to keep it positive. Let's start with the pros.
Well, that means we're going to end with the cons then.
Fine, but we hear the pros first. Set ourselves up for success.
So sometimes if you work with me long enough, I'll talk about the shit sandwich, which means you put the bad news in the middle of two really good news things. So you start and end on a good note and then bundle the crap in the middle. So there you go. A little, maybe that's TMI. So when it comes to like, when you just think about investment and startups, Daryl, before we like, yeah, I mean, what are some of the things that you think about when it comes to pros?
The pros, sometimes there's high upside. I mean, especially at this day and age, we've seen a ton of startups recently make a lot of waves and make people a whole. So the opportunity to take a smaller sum of money and blow it up into a very large sum of money is there in startups.
So, and like I said, your background's in traditional finance. I mean, why is so much money flowing into that side of investment as opposed to just buying Apple stock?
Well, for one, I think it's buzzy. It is more exciting than long-term investments in the stock market or mutual funds and kind of just holding securities. I think there's an element of excitement, and I think there is the element of the potential to get rich quick. I think that's what a lot of people are looking for. It's become definitely more mainstream, so you hear it talked about more. It's the common public space and public language that they're become the general public is becoming more sophisticated investors in general. So for a lot of people that have a little bit of money to their name, it makes a lot of sense to try to really maximize your return.
Now, the thing is, though, is with startups, you don't get rich quick. I know I'm mixing cons in here, but that's true.
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely risky. That startup is bound to hit a million different bumps in the road. And that's why your diligence process when investing your money with that startup is so key.
So in some regards, the earlier the better, but the earlier the riskier.
Correct.
We just officially commingled the pros and cons, which are changing the entire trajectory of this. Cause I don't want, and I say that cause I don't feel comfortable like sitting here talking about like the rock star element without talking about the grungy underbelly. Cause
I think that's actually a perfect representation of the current landscape of investing though. They are commingled. Go hand in hand if you're investing in startups. It's just a nature of where we're at with the investment landscape right now. It is very much commingled. So I think it's a fair representation of the reality.
So, all right. So now that we've officially commingled the pros and cons, and you know, before we get into the rest of that, I'll go ahead and give another shout out to our crowd. So today you can join our crowd's investment and Beyond XR, and that's a platform that's enabling the world's leading brands to attract customers with the future of virtual shopping journeys. Beyond XR's 3D technology is transforming the way brands do business in the $4 trillion e-commerce market. You can get in early on Beyond XR and other unique opportunities at ourcrowd.com/hustle. There's a link in the show notes and click that link. Seriously, click that link and sign up. The account's free. Poke around. They have a really cool platform. I mean, if you're just interested, sign up, take a look, and make sure you click that link because we like it when they continue to sponsor our show because that feels better about our ability to do the show. And as someone that manages our finance, I think you'll confirm that.
Oh, yeah. Show our credit for the love you can.
So now with that, you know, that's the thing, though, is, dude, there's so many startups. So many. Like,
so many.
How do we even pick?
It's tough. That is the key to this whole thing is the ability to put together a diligence process for the money that you're going to invest.
Right. And, you know, we're still talking about some of the pros and we'll mix some of the cons and maybe even some things to look for. But, you know, like I do want to, one thing that I'm going to throw a con out there. So when you, okay, if you go buy stock in, this is the difference, but we talked about securities, but the difference between buying stock in Apple and buying stock in Startup X, well, you can sell that. You can sell that stake in Apple with a click of a button and there's a buyer and you'll get your cash in your bank account and whatever. Daryl, why are startups illiquid?
So you are committing X amount of dollars to that company for X amount of time, whatever that term sheet that you're signing and the investment that you're agreeing to make, you are tying up that money for X amount of time. So that business knows, one, how long they have until they pay you back that money, if it's something like a non-dilutive type investment, and they need to know how long that they have that money for. And then if it's something that is just straight up an equity play where you're exchanging cash for a percentage of that company, until that company has some kind of sale event, then that money is being used by that business to build the business.
Or if they're issuing dividends. And sure. I mean, here's the thing though, the term startups and profitability are like oil and water. I mean, it depends on what it is. And, you know, I think we're bundling startups into too broad of a term there, right? Because we'll look at like the company that we've built at Full Scale. Full Scale is a completely different type of startup than my business partner has at Stackify, right?
Correct. Yeah, and it's different types, different sizes, different game plans on how they're going to monetize, different exit strategies on what they plan to accomplish with the company. There, I mean, startup, you're correct, is entirely too broad of a term.
And different valuation multiples when it comes to attracting investors, because, you know, like that's even though at Full Scale we do tech services, we're not a tech company because we're basically in the service business. And unfortunately for me and maybe the rest of us, is that doesn't get that sexy, crazy, like exponential feeling multiple that goes with it. So that's one of the things, you know, when it comes to investing, and where some of these startup platforms are going to help you vet what you're doing, is that's part of what they're looking for. Because I think it's really easy. So let's look at a really mainstream example of just disgusting overvaluation. WeWork. WeWork, very well publicized. Daryl, why was WeWork overhyped and overvalued?
Certain startups have the potential to be worth so much because they can scale way ahead of their costs, so their expenses to run the business. So when you are a SaaS platform with user base, you can add users without adding employees and costs and facilities. So your operating costs can still relatively remain low as your profits completely skyrocket. So with more service-based type industries where your costs have to rise almost in a fixed manner with your revenue, there's no ability for that kind of that large valuation, because you're always going to be tacking on huge operation costs to increase any of the revenue that would be coming into the business.
So you look at like, well, the business that our crowd is mentioning, and the Beyond XR, which virtual 3D shopping. So here's the thing, software shows up to work every day. So a product like that, and when it's been vetted, especially, they can look at it and like, oh, okay, this could expand from 1,000 people using it to 10,000 people using it. And we don't have to, we likely don't have to hire more people now. The profitability can rise sharply, and that some of that's just about turning a server up,
right?
Software shows up every day,
right? I mean, you just 10x your revenue, but you don't have to nearly 10x your expenses to generate that revenue. You may have to do
it then on point one,
right?
Our own business, Full Scale, is hard to scale, even though we're named Full Scale, because people have to perform those services. And correct. With that, we don't just hire anyone. We only hire like the top 10% of applicants, which means we got to find them. We got to recruit them, assess them, retain them, employ them, all of it. And then just the nature of people in general is people aren't consistent. They want time off and they have lives and they have families and they get sick and they quit and go work somewhere else, or they don't perform the way that you want them to and you fire them. And, you know, so like at Full Scale, like right now we have all 180 of our people are fully engaged with clients, and we actually have a waiting list, which is great and terrible at the same time, because we have the opportunity to do business, but we can struggle to scale. And then sometimes we hire a bunch of people and hoping the business is there, and then it comes in slower.
Right. Not definitely problems to have, different levels of problems.
We should say it's not scalable. It's just slower to scale. Where we'll take Matt Watson's company at Stackify. They could have 1,000 new users sign up today and hit that platform. And quite honestly, all they're going to need to do is maybe turn the server up a little bit. If they even have to do that, it might already be set to do that. And then another thing too, is a lot of software and tech companies, once they get ingrained, and that's actually what we liked about Gigabook, was once you build a system that runs a business, that business is really hesitant to switch.
Yep.
So that's general stickiness. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So Daryl, what are some of the things so we've invested about $1.5 million and startups. And you talk about what does that look like? We write code. We don't write checks. So we use our excess capacity to help startups get moving, or in some cases help existing ones push forward a little bit in exchange for some equity or warrants, which are like future options where we could buy. But what are some of the things that we look for when we make these investments?
So one of the most key things to me is the industry they're in and the potential earning power that the company could have within that industry. So if it's a small industry, even if you're the best at it and the only one, that you have very limited earning capacity. So I think the general scope of the industry is one of the very key things to really understand.
So some of those businesses, like, and what Daryl's referring to is often called TAM, T-A-M, total addressable market. And well, let's just use one of our portfolio companies, Stenovate. Yep. So Stenovate provides efficiency solutions for court reporters, which is really unique. They don't have much, if any, competition on many days, but there is a finite nature to that because there's only so many court reporters. There's only so many transcriptionists, and it's not like, you know, something like, for example, a cleaning company where there's millions of people there. So those cleaning companies have to compete with a gazillion other, like I actually had a guy that had some cleaning, had a cleaning efficiency, like to help you run your cleaning company, Get Route. They were one of our Chicago top startups. So he told me in the US, there's a million cleaning companies.
Well, I'm not surprised at all.
I mean, a lot of those are one person,
right?
But it still counts. So you can get lost in the crowd. So some of the things I'm looking for, who's the jockey? Who are the founders? Who's the founding team? Do they have a successful history? Because here's the thing I've just learned is can we agree that I'm old?
I mean, we can agree that I'm old.
I turned 46 this year, and in the world of tech, on some days I feel like a freaking dinosaur. But overall, like, here's the thing: I'll use myself as I have wins, have rings or trophies, and that matters because you learn a lot on the way to that. I think that, and that's a big thing. So you know, you're gonna look at the company, you're gonna look at the team, and then, like you mentioned, not only looking at the industry, but what's the industry experience? Now, and we'll use Stenovate again. The founder, Lauren Lawrence, she is a court reporter, she is a stenographer, and she had a firsthand understanding of the problems that they were trying to solve, and that direct relation to it, it's helpful.
Yeah. Hey, I want to back up one step because you mentioned that you've got rings and trophies. One thing that I really like when you're kind of looking at the founding team is that you have scarves too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about that some more. So, like,
yeah, you know, everybody's seen that golden kid who was perfect and the first time adversity hit, crumbled. You definitely don't want that. So I like knowing that my management team knows how to win, but they also know how to bounce back from failure, because that is the only guarantee with these startups is that they will hit failure at some point. There's going to be a road bump. There's going to be a pivot. There's going to be something unexpected. So I want to know that the founding team knows how to deal with failure, adversity. They know how to adapt and still come out ahead.
I think some of the reason that that's important too is until you've really been knocked down and kicked and run over, you feel kind of bulletproof. And I use this example a lot because you were there and we wrote about it. I wrote about it, Million Dollar Bedroom. At one point, we had innovated some things that were creating a large amount of passive income for us. And it was just going, and we were like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. And then we got penalized by Google. And that went from making thousands of dollars a day to nothing. And I look back at that, and I have such an appreciation for that occurring when it occurred for me, because I learned to respect it. I mean, it taught you that basically the sales gods will give it and take it away at their own discretion on many days. But the thing is someone that hasn't lost and someone that hasn't been, well, first off, if you're an entrepreneur and you're saying that you haven't struggled, you haven't failed and you haven't lost, either you're lying or you haven't been doing it that long, because entrepreneurship in general and startups especially are quite humbling on many days. So is raising capital. So, you know, I mean, those are some of the things. But yeah, if a founder hasn't failed, I don't like that, actually, because I don't want my money to be what they build their failure upon. And that can happen. So, you know, another thing when it comes to when you're considering and looking at these alternate platforms, and, you know, like I know we're talking about a lot of pros and cons, but this is geared to help people that might want to look at these platforms and these micro investments about what to look for. And, you know, you got to keep in mind that early stage companies are slow to develop. I think that Hollywood will lead you to believe that people start a startup and then 2 years later they sell it for a B, meaning like the third trace commas. And that's not how it works. Actually, most companies that are acquired that's occurring in the 7 to 10 year mark, if ever. And that's just kind of the way it goes.
Yep.
All right. How about some best practices, just general best practices? So if you're going to go and you're going to use platforms, let's name a few of these platforms. It's like they're out there. You know, Our Crowd, obviously, that's the sponsor of today's episode. Now, Our Crowd, they do accredited investors. Some of these other platforms don't. Like, for example, let's take Seed Invest. And well, that's also exclusive to accredited investors, but non-accredited investors can do small. They have small tiers. So maybe like $500 or something small. Some of them, like there's another one called Fundable. It has a minimum investment of $1,000. Now let's talk about Republic, because we actually have a pretty sizable investment in our friend Roy Scott and Healthy Hip Hop. They have an active campaign on Republic right now. And even though I technically own 10% of the outstanding shares, I made an investment in it because I wanted to see how it worked. And I was able to put $250, charge it to my credit card. It was quick and it was easy, man. And it did ask me some questions and some qualifying stuff. And it's got a whole entire page. Go check it out. Go check out Healthy Hip Hop on Republic and see what that's about, because that's a good example. Now, that's a different kind of platform than something like Our Crowd, because that is a true equity crowdfunding. So, you know, it had like 40 different investments made, and it was at like $7,500 after the first couple of days or something. Now, another popular one's AngelList, and it might be the oldest and most established of the list that we have. And that helps with that stuff. Now, there's a lot of these things springing up, which my gut tells me you need to look towards to the our crowds, to the Republics and the things like that, because I got to wonder on some of this, we vet them. Okay. What does that look like?
Right.
What does diligence or vetting look up or their early stage business?
So I would go back to that. Startup is a very broad term. So that's very much going to depend on the round that is being opened. Other investors that have already invested, is this the first time they're taking in investment? I mean, it could be as simple as a very non-formal contract that you're going to put in X amount of dollars and receive X percent of that company back in equity. Or you could go through some very serious diligence round if the investment is enough. And that's going to include a full look into the background of the founders, their personal financial statements, what they look like personally from a financial point of view, what the company looks like from a financial point of view. So it can get very deep into the background of the individual starting the company, depending on how, I guess, creative the round is.
You know, you bring up a good point there, because a lot of people would think, well, why would they look at the financial history or background of a founder? Well, if you can't manage your own money, how are you? Why would someone think you could manage $10 million? By the way, that's another thing, in my opinion, that comes with that experience already been down the road. And I know a lot of people that write big checks, and I repeat this as if I'm a parrot. But they'll say, like they've told me, and I never even thought about this until the first time I heard this a couple of years. We got to know what you're going to be like when you have access to $5 million.
Yep.
Because you see these goofy, you know, you see like the show Silicon Valley, who kind of pokes fun at a lot of that. You know, here comes this $50 million check. And next thing you know, there's a private party with Kid Rock and like jets and Lambos and a lot of that. And here's the thing. Once the investor puts that money in, they're in some cases, they have maybe even no control. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. But, you know, overall, so, I mean, that's some of what comes in. Now, one thing, if you're not experienced and you're looking at these platforms, one of the things that I do want you to look for in best practices is, what's the valuation? So, like, what does that mean? So when you're buying stock in anything, it has a value. Now, Apple stock during this conversation and of us recording this, it changed. It didn't just stay the same. It might have just gone up and down by pennies or maybe dollars or who knows. Now, investing in startups is a little more static than that in the beginning. So like, you'll look at something and it'll say you have an $8 million valuation, which means that whatever amount you put in, so say it's $100, you will take 100 and divide it by 8 million. And that's what percentage of that company you own.
Yep.
And sometimes there's other things that come in. There's caps and discounts and a lot of it. And now we're getting into stuff that, quite honestly, I've been an entrepreneur. We both went to top 10 business schools. I dropped out. You didn't. But with that, like, you know, that whole like the valuation thing and caps and discounts. I tell a really funny story because I made a trip all the way to New York City several years ago. And you remember when I went to do that? And I sat down with some real sophisticated people for one meeting before the next day was filled with them. I came out of that meeting and I said, oh my God, I got a lot of shit to learn by tomorrow morning. Yeah. And quite honestly, I took an Adderall and I drank about a pot of coffee and I didn't sleep that night because I had to get myself up to speed because, dude, there's a lot of different ways that your money can go in, right?
Oh yeah. And you can get laughed out of that room quickly.
And you can also get left out later. Yeah. Like there's certain types of investments like where you have priority when it comes to the company being sold and certain things. And like, I mean, I'm saying there's a lot of complexity. There's a lot of complexity. So it's not always straightforward. That's one of the things that I think you should look for in these startup investment platforms, these equity crowdfunding platforms, is how clearly are they explaining it to you? And our crowd does a great job with that. Some of the other ones we mentioned do as well, and really helping you understand. And then, you know, and then some of it, you know, like some of them are going to almost, they're going to basically transfer you tokens of sorts. Like you have actual securities and things. Now, while it isn't as straightforward now, I do think the marketplace related to startups and owners equity and owning equity in them and stuff like that, I do think we're not that far down the road from having some level of tradability and improving the liquidity of them. There are even some platforms that help employees like sell their options back. But that if you can't afford to have your money in that until a point that someone else determines when you don't make the investment.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So, you know, some other things too is, and like I said, some of this is a cautionary tale. Please do not take all of your life savings and dump it into one startup.
Yeah. It's a
not a good that I said I'm not going to tell you how to invest your money, but I will there. Cause
As a former licensed member of FINRA, I have to say that I'm not a financial investor. It's not financial advice, but that's a pretty good recipe for heartache.
Well, it can be because you get your money stuck. Now, look, that's something that's happened to me as a founder in my own company. You saw it happen to me last year in 2020. I'm not shy about it. I was basically all in. We were at the point where that was going to pay off big. And then a global pandemic hit.
Right.
And I was screwed a couple different ways because I had basically all my money in the company and then the company needed money. Right. And think about yourself as your own startup and how you're going to navigate in and around that. Because I will tell you one thing, you're not going to go down to your bank and borrow against the securities that you own in a startup that is not publicly traded. Banks are not at that point yet. They are going to ignore that. They're going to literally like because we went through that. We were trying to refinance our own company. And here we are. We own $1.5 million worth of stock in other companies. And Daryl, what did the banks say about that?
Don't care.
In so many words, they did not care. Yeah.
No, I actually had one tell me I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And that led to, and for those of you that know me well or know me well enough through the podcast, that put me on the war path a little bit because it, you know, I go to events and I do things and all these banks want my business. They want my money. They want my endorsement. They want my referrals. And then they won't even recognize a startup's assets in other startups. I'm like, why would I give you my business or do any, you won't even recognize my business and its net worth or the other sites we've invested. Let me know the curve and making a difference there. So, you know, and then another thing too is whether you're investing in a startup in a very direct way, that means outside of these kind of equity crowdfunding platforms or whatever, what is your post-investment involvement? Like, are you expected to like really be involved or not? Because I think that having a misunderstanding about that leads to a lot of heartache.
It can lead to a rough relationship with that company as well. Either you're overstepping bounds and offering advice that you're not supposed to be offering, you were strictly a check, or you were supposed to be a check plus some expertise. You brought something that company needed in a way that you could help them succeed, and you're not holding up to your end of the bargain there either.
Yeah, and that can feel disappointing. And in the past, at Gigabook, we had one advisor we signed up that just didn't do anything. And we had to like send legal notification. That's like, by the way, you're not an advisor and you don't get your options.
Yep.
And that certainly didn't help my relationship with that person later on down the road. Just meaning like that's it. But right. I mean, really, in the end, when you get into all of this, I think the moral of the story is, regardless of whether it's an Our Crowd, Republic, Seed Invest, AngelList, any of that, or just with a person you know, good fences make good neighbors. And they say that for a reason, because keep it in bounds. And understand you really have to look at, I say, sunny day and rainy day. If everything you're written only has to do with one of those, you have a very incomplete agreement. Like, you need to look at things like, what happened? Okay, what if you want to sell your ownership? Like, who has the first rights for that? Like, right. We have that at Full Scale. Like, if I or Matt want to sell our ownership in the company to someone else, either one of us gets the first right to buy that before the other person. These are things you need to think out. And that's where legal professionals and financial advisors and people that do that shit all day are making their money. So, you know, past that, and that's where you can lean on companies like Our Crowd. And once again, a big thanks to Our Crowd for helping us bring you today's episode. Click the link in the show notes, ourcrowd.com/hustle. It's free to sign up in their platform. And, you know, they don't bug you. You're not going to like, your phone isn't going to ring 2 minutes later, and you're not going to get a bunch of spammy bullshit. I think it's a great, I love this whole thing, because I think anything that gets startup founders gives you more options for raising capital and doing it in a way that feels a lot more painless than I've been through is a great thing. So, you know, as Daryl, as you're aware, I end my episodes of Startup Hustle with the Founders Freestyle. And I say my episodes, I'm not the only host of Startup Hustle. Make sure you tune in on Tuesdays to learn all about e-commerce and Amazon from Marknology founder Andrew Morgans. Tune in on Thursdays with Innovate Her founder Lauren Conaway. And man, I don't even know. She talks about so much different stuff and so much amazing things. I can't get 20 seconds into one of Lauren's episodes without smiling, because she just has that great energy around her. If you haven't had enough Startup Hustle by then, did you know that we started a TV show? All you got to do is go to YouTube and type in Startup Hustle. It's real easy to find us, and you will learn a whole lot of stuff. Daryl, what would you like to say on your way out?
Nothing. I appreciate you having me on. Once again, diligence is key here. Rely on professionals for help. Make sure you truly understand what you're getting yourself into in all aspects, and definitely rely on this ever-growing world of help with the investment with places like it's a great resource.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, overall, like I said, if you're a startup, you should look into places like Our Crowd and the other ones that we mentioned. And if you want to get your feet wet with investing into startups, then these equity crowdfunding platforms are a great way to do it. Just make sure that you're doing it within your means, within your ability, and you're making informed decisions. And past that, I mean, you still got to pick winners no matter what it is. So, you know, like I said, if you feel comfortable getting into that stuff, go for it. Thanks for joining me, Daryl, and thanks for tuning in, everyone. I'll catch up with you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it like we do it.